You're listening to the Reading Envy podcast, where I'll have what you're reading. Hi, everyone. This is Jenny, and you've reached the Reading Envy podcast, where we'll have what you're reading. And today is a guest that's coming back to us for the third time. It's Bianca. Welcome back, Bianca.
Hi, thank you for having me again.
It's lovely to see you. If you want to hear more from Bianca, you can go back to episodes 127 and 145. I was surprised to find it had been over a year, actually.
It's been a long time, but it's felt like longer than that.
So how was your reading year last year?
You know, it was pretty good. It was actually a lot better than I expected it to be. The pandemic actually helped my reading, I guess, or, you know, just being at home more, like having to stay home more than I would have otherwise. I had one of my best reading years. I think I ended up reading 80 something books. I want to say 81 or 82. I track it on Goodreads. Yeah, it was really good. I read a lot of fiction, a lot of fiction. Some of the stuff that I really liked, for example, The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, or that last year.
So cute.
Oh, I loved that book. It was so good. Gentleman in Moscow, another one that's a lot of people like on Litzy and Goodreads. I think I read some audiobooks, even though it was home and, you know, not able to, wasn't driving as much. I still got some audiobooks in while cleaning the house, working out, coloring, that sort of thing. A lot of library usage, but I use the library a lot anyway. But, you know, I couldn't really go to bookstores as much as I would have otherwise. So,
do you use like the digital content from your library, or were you going there?
No, I was mostly using the digital content. I use Hoopla and Libby a lot.
Love them.
Yes. Sometimes I like just scrolling through Libby, like when I'm looking for my next book and I don't have, you know, any ideas for exactly what I want to read. And I'm such a mood reader. So sometimes it actually helps me to just scroll through and I end up seeing something that maybe I had forgotten about, you know, a book that I'd heard about when it came out and forgotten about because that's just the way my brain works, and end up picking it up and reading it and liking it or something like that.
It seems like the way they add new content, at least this is what I've noticed, is they have kind of chunks of stuff that they add. And so all of a sudden, they'll be like, look what's new. And it's two pages of cowboy romance.
Yeah. Yep. I remember that on Libby. Or like around the holidays, it's like, look, all of these holiday romances for you to read.
I've read a few because there were so many Amish holiday romances one year. I was like, okay, fine. They were cute.
Yet to read an Amish romance. That's one romance I haven't read yet. So I'll have to look into that. I don't think I've read any Amish romance, or is it still called inspirational romance in general? If it's like Christian or something like that.
So it's kind of like that, you know, where it's very mild, except for there seems to be baked goods always in there somewhere.
Okay.
Because the women, you know, that's the skills that they're learning.
Yeah. Well, I'm sold then.
Yeah. It's baked, I mean, goods. Especially for holidays, it's kind of, you know, fits.
I'll have to check that out. I have no idea where to start for an Amish romance, but I guess I can look at Libby.
Yeah. So I guess it's really early in 2021. Do you set reading goals for yourself? Do you have any for this year?
So for this year, really the only reading goal that I set for myself is my Goodreads goal. I decided to up my number from last year and sort of challenge myself. This is a challenge for me. I know it's not a challenge for other people to read 100 books in a year.
Oh, yeah.
I know plenty of people do it all the time, like plenty of people on Litzy anyway and Goodreads that I am friends with. But I really wanted to prioritize reading for myself. And I think part of that was because it helped me get through last year so much. It was, you know, not only a sort of escapist thing, but also I feel like it kind of helped me slow down a little bit. I set a goal of 100 books for this year. And so far, I feel like I've been doing pretty well. I don't remember reading this many books last January. I think I've read 15, 14 or 15. I'd have to look at Goodreads.
Wow.
That's like primarily the way that I keep up.
Yeah, that's great.
And I keep track. And then other than that, I thought about trying to do a reading challenge, like one of the ones that goes around Litzy or one of the online ones, like Pop Sugar has one. Obviously, Book Riot has their annual one. But I'm not so great at like prescribed reading, so to speak, because I'm such a mood reader. And also, I thought that I could make my own, not make my own challenge, but prioritize the things that reading, the kind of stuff that really makes me happy or makes me engaged. So I started off this year reading comic books. And decided I would prioritize reading comic books this year as well. I didn't read many here, but I have some on my shelf and I have a lot on my TBR. So that's another thing. Not really a challenge, but kind of a goal for this year.
Well, I think as readers, we get kind of caught up in the shoulds sometimes, you know?
Yes.
Not just like the challenges, but even just like to read all those books that everyone else is talking about or the trending ones. And so it can be good to kind of pull back from that and be like, but what do I want to read?
Yep.
That sounds really good.
I definitely am really influenced sometimes by Litzy, what people are reading about on Litzy and things like that. So yeah, definitely. I think that kind of encapsulates what I want to do this year is instead of feeling like I should be reading these books, how about I read these other books that I want to read?
Yeah.
And spend my time, my free time, you know, that way.
There's a challenge that I'm doing for the second year called Read the World 21. And it was started by Lauren, who's been on the podcast before, and Rachel. The Rachel person in Instagram, she's known as A Novel Family, and she's doing a challenge in February just to read what you own. And there's different versions of that from different people. But I feel like in this past year, I've been reading more of the books I already have too. And so I'm looking forward to focusing on that more as well. I never buy a book without a reason. But then for some reason, like library books start to be prioritized or, you know, the advanced reader copies start to get prioritized because they all feel like they have deadlines. And then it's like I never get to the ones that I actually cared enough to buy. So
yeah,
I'm going to try to do better about that just, you know, the entire year, actually, because I've really enjoyed last year how many more of my own books I read.
I am currently building up my personal library.
Nice.
I moved across the country a few years ago. I donated and gave away so many books. And since then, I've been gradually building my library back up. I get a lot of books as gifts.
Good.
So, yeah. So, and then for Christmas, my husband gave me 3 bookcases from IKEA.
Nice.
Yeah. Cause he knew that I, you know, I want to have my own personal library again. That's right now it takes up like 1 bookcase, but I want to build it up a lot more. So
that's a lot of space for growth.
Yeah. So I have 3 that are pretty much empty right now, but I'm slowly putting things on. So yeah,
that's great. So when you read comics, do you read individual issues or do you wait for them to come out in like volumes that are bound together?
I prefer to wait for the trades, which are the volumes.
Is that what I'm supposed to call them? I don't know the lingo.
Oh, no, it's fine. So I've heard them called trades referring to the actual paper copies, but I actually read a lot of digital copies from my library because there are a lot of comic books on Hoopla, which is really cool.
And they're so expensive to buy.
Yes, they can be. It can be an habit buying comic books and graphic novels. I do prefer to read the collected. It depends. It depends. So for example, I started reading this series that was pretty new called Killing the Children. It's a horror comic book series by James Tinian IV. He did The Backstagers. And it's really good, great art, great story. And of course, it being by James Tinian IV, one of the main characters, and it's not about the character being gay, which again, I love. But anyway, so I started reading this last year, and because of didn't have the collected volume, but they had the individual issues on Hoopla. So I borrowed the individual issues. The problem with doing that is you go through your monthly bar real fast.
Yeah, definitely.
I would go through my monthly borrows in, 2 weeks or whatever. Otherwise, I will check out the trade copies. So the paper copies, if I can. If I can't, then I will go to Libby or Hoopla. Sometimes they're on Libby. It's like a big name series. It's a Marvel comic. So for example, I started off on Hoopla Hawkeye, Kate Bishop, it's called, and it's by Kelly Thompson. So yes, it is that guy from the MCU movies, if you've watched them, and obviously from the Marvel Comics universe, but it's the female version who was Clinton's apprentice, essentially. And it came out in the past few years, but because it's been out for, a few years now, it was it was 2017 to 2018 or 2019 is this run of this series. It's all collected now in trades as well as digitized on, Comixology and Hoopla. So I started reading the series on Hoopla, and then I was able to get the third volume from my library, the actual paper copy, was really satisfying, because I'll just plug this real quick. It's a great series. It's really fun. It's really funny. The art, spectacular. I really like the group Kate Bishop. It's by Kelly Thompson. She has done other stuff for Marvel. I think she did a Deadpool, a non-Deadpool. And I can't remember off the top of my head the other, I don't know. That's really cool that my library system has all these comic books that I can get access to. I don't have to buy them to read them.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. I've never really looked around at my library. They're kind of have a reputation for not being so open-minded. So I've just been surprised at how much I can get to on the digital stuff they provide. So maybe that's just what I'll have to be satisfied with for now. But I wanted to tell you, actually, I think it was because of you that I read the Backstagers, and I thought that was so cute. It was so fun.
Oh, yay. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it was so funny.
It's a nice little, it's just a nice little world to be in with the characters and.
Yeah. And, drama kids.
Yes.
Plus a little horror, but drama kids.
Yeah, it's always fun.
Well, and I think each of us brought specific books to talk about that we've read lately and liked. So would you like to go first? I mean, I know you've already mentioned some that you like, so I might as well throw more in.
Yeah. I couldn't help it. If you start me talking about comic books, I am going to drop names
of
what I've been reading lately. But yeah, so my first pick is actually not a comic book. It's a romance. I think of it as a young adult romance, but online, apparently, people are referring to it as a new adult romance. I don't want to go into what I think the real differences are between new adult and young adult and whether there are differences, so I won't. This book I loved. It's called Conventionally Yours by Annabeth Albert. It's the first in one of her latest series with the publisher Sourcebooks, Casablanca. It's about these two young men. They're both in their early 20s, and they are part of this group of gamers who play this tabletop card game called Odyssey. It reminds me a lot of Magic the Gathering, if you've ever heard of or had any experience with Magic the Gathering. very nerdy, very geeky. Anyway, so they're part of this group who plays together, and they will film videos for this YouTube personality named Gamer Grandpa. He's a professor of mathematics, and he has this YouTube channel specifically about this game. He'll do analyses of gameplay, things like that. He's really popular online, and he looks like he sort of looks like Einstein with his like crazy hair and glasses and stuff. And he's kind of almost the leader of this little group of young men who play. It's very it has a found family feeling for me, which I appreciate. So the two main characters, Alden and Conrad, are in this group, and they're not exactly friends. They don't really consider themselves friends. They kind of consider themselves rivals because obviously they compete with each other playing this card game, but also they don't really get along on camera or off camera. They each have these preconceptions about each other that you quickly learn while as reading the book are very wrong. So they each think that the other has this sort of charmed, perfect life, which is very much not the case. And they're very different, at least at first. And then you sort of learn, and they learn about each other, that they're maybe not so different, or at least their differences don't constitute such a wide gulf, you know, between each other. So when it begins, they learn that they have gotten free tickets to this huge convention of this card game. It's called Massive Odyssey Con. Gamer Grandpa has gotten these free tickets from the con. The tickets sold out like months before. And so, of course, Gamer Grandpa was like, let's go. Like, they invited me to be on this panel. You guys are going to come. We're going to make videos. It's going to be great. Both Alden and Conrad, for different reasons, absolutely have to go to this con in order to compete in the huge tournament, Odyssey tournament, that's happening at the con. The winner of the tournament wins a bunch of money, not to mention all kinds of opportunities. So Conrad, you learn, he's 21. He's totally on his own. He had to drop out of college. And for unknown reasons, he is not in contact with any of his family, his you know, family of origin. So he has absolutely no help from them. And he is working multiple dead end minimum wage jobs just to make ends meet and living with this really awesome, sweet professor who has a spare room in her house. And this is how he's able to live and in this college town where he's. And then, of course, he learns about this free ticket to the Odyssey Con. Is like, this is my chance, right? This is my chance to pull myself out of this life that I've found myself that is at where I want to be. Then, of course, right after he learns about this opportunity, he learns from his landlady that she's retiring and she's going to sell her house. So, of course, he's like, okay, well, this is interesting timing. I guess I'm going to just go all in and quit. You know, he quits his job and his minimum wage jobs and decides to spend the rest of the money that he has in savings to go to this con because they have to find a way to get there themselves. All they have are the free tickets. They don't have, you know, paid transportation or anything like that. And so this is his goal that we learn in the beginning is go to this con and win the tournament. And he's sort of the underdog when it comes to playing this game. In the videos, he's often the one who gets beaten by Alden, who is kind of a wunderkind player. He's a little bit older. He's 23, and he comes from a different background than Conrad. His parents, he has two mothers, and his parents are extremely successful, you know, in scare quotes, as in one of them, a professor at the college in this town, and very, you know, well-respected and all of that. And then his mother is a doctor. I want to say she's a neurosurgeon or a heart surgeon, one of those like really highfalutin, like. And so they have these really super high expectations of Alden. And Alden, it becomes clear, is on the spectrum, possibly. He has trouble with standardized tests. He gets super anxious. He has like a lot of anxiety in general, and it affects his testing, amongst other things. He is not great with socializing, as in his social skills. He's not like super popular or anything like that, which is how he perceives Conrad. He sees Conrad as this popular class clown type, because that is the sort of the facade that Conrad exudes. Anyway, so Alden, he has finished his undergrad degree and he's getting a post-baccalaureate certificate in like pre-med because his parents really want him to go to med school. He also has wanted to go to med school and become a doctor, but he's taken the MCAT sometimes and has not done well because of his test anxiety. His parents have tried to get him help. They've taken him to different providers, tried to get him diagnoses, but it's all been sort of one provider might this, another might that. So he doesn't necessarily have what comes with diagnoses, which can be treatment. And he sort of tries to manage. They end up having to go on a road trip together to Vegas, to the sun, where they're both going to compete in the tournament for the same prize. In a way, of course, they become friends. They get to know each other better. They have to spend time alone in the car. They have to spend the night at motels on the way. And of course, in one place, it's a case of there's only bed. They develop this connection over the course of the trip that turns into a romantic relationship. And then they have to go into start playing tournament while being in this romantic relationship. And it obviously complicates things a lot. Their relationship has changed how they're approaching the tournament and how they're approaching wanting to get this prize for their different reasons. So yeah, it's really good. I really liked it. I've read Annabeth Albert before, and I thought it was one of her better books. I don't know if it's because it felt like, to me, very young adult-ish in a way that I like, that maybe some others don't like, where the main characters are sort of figuring out where they fit in the world, and they're figuring out how they want their lives to look and how they want their lives to be, and sort of weighing the expectations of others against their own desires, their own expectations of themselves, their own goals, and trying to figure it all out at the same time they are falling in love with someone and coming to accept themselves with the help of this love. You know, that's why I feel I call this a young adult romance, even though online it's referred to as new adult. But yeah, whatever.
Tropes like your first road trip. That's always like your first one that you take without your parents. Yes. You know, it's very formative too, I think. So yes, adding
that
romance
definitely feels
there.
Very young adult.
I saw on her website that there's another book coming. That's like a second book to this. So that's exciting.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to that one. I think it comes out in July is the release date that I saw, or the release month. I'm definitely going to read it. I believe it follows Jasper, who is a secondary character in this book. He's part of their gaming group. He works at the gaming store where they go and play and record some of the videos. And he's cute, and we don't learn a whole lot about him, except we learn a little bit about his family in this book, his family of origin. His sister, it has a chronic illness, and it's very precarious for her, and she has to be hospitalized. And so he has that kind of going on, and he's young, around their age. Other than that, I don't really know what the book's going to be about. But one of the things I really liked about this book is just how nerdy and geeky it is. It goes deep into this game called Odyssey. Like, you get scenes of Alden playing Conrad and Alden playing other characters. You get some of the strategy and some information about the different cards. And just like with Magic the Gathering, the cards are very expensive. They're all about the art and things like this. For Conrad, it can be a case of he's the underdog because his deck isn't necessarily as high powered as other people's who can afford the $100 cards and, these really expensive cards that he simply can't afford. I know I found all of that interesting because I have friends and family who have played and some who do play Magic the Gathering. And so sort of peripherally, I know a little bit about it and the sort of enthusiasm and geekery that surrounds it. It's got road trip plot, which I like. It was just delightful. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, so. It sounds great.
What about you?
Really quick tangent. Have you ever seen the web show The Guild?
I don't think I've ever watched it, but I've heard about it.
I promise that if you like this book, it's all about found family, gamer people, and it's
okay.
It's so cute because they can be anyone when they're in the game, and so they're different characters, but you see the real people too. It's really cute. You'd like it, I think.
Do they play Dungeons and Dragons?
Yeah, it's like a game like that. That I don't think they call it that. No, it's not Dungeons and Dragons. Okay. It's more like World of Warcraft, that kind of game.
Oh, okay.
So like at first they only know each other from being in this guild together online, but then they meet up.
Oh, okay.
So gotcha. You have like the older guy who's lived by himself, the mother of some infants who is trying to be a mother but kind of not, these two people that are in like a romance, you know, they're just like all really character driven. But okay, well, my first book is The Secret Lives of Church Ladies by Disha Filia, and this comes out from West Virginia University Press, which is a really small press and doesn't spend a lot of money on marketing, but somehow this book still ended up on the National Book Award finalist list. It didn't win, but when I heard the description of it, I just knew I was going to love it. But I decided to wait for the audio because I was hoping, because it's 9 different stories and they're all from a different woman's perspective. And I thought, oh, great, they could have like 9 narrators. That would be so great. And they didn't do it that way. They just have one narrator and she does a really good job, but it wasn't exactly what I was hoping for. And so when you say church lady, you get this one picture in your head. So all the characters are Black, it should be said. And so the church part figures into it almost just kind of as a background. So you kind of know their basic economic status, basic family culture. There's a lot of expectation of how they'll behave and what they'll do. And a lot of them, of course, are not doing those things. And so whether or not it's in public or not, there's a lot of, you know, my life, my identity versus the expectation of that in there. And the best example of that is probably the story called Peach Cobbler. It's about a single mother and she lives on the edge of town and she has a daughter. Her daughter is like early years of high school and they go to church and every Monday, the minister comes over and her mother makes a peach cobbler and he eats the entire thing by himself. And then they go into the bedroom. And so there's this kind of sweet story about how at the beginning, when the daughter was younger, she thought the minister was God because there'd be different things. She just misunderstood who God was. And she thought that her mom was making this peach cobbler for God. And so things get clearer as she gets older, of course. Obviously, he's not supposed to be there. And they all go to this church together, which is strange and awkward. And so it's kind of the story about the daughter dealing with the mother's inconsistencies, I guess you could say. And there are some days where the minister doesn't come and the mother gets upset and she throws the peach cobbler away and the daughter tries to eat it. And that gets into this other story. And then there's a story later on in the collection where it's a story about the daughter going to tutor the minister's son. So it gets really complicated. There's a lot in here about like women's bodies and the, I guess, assumption that others make about you based on how you look, especially, you know, racially and gender-based. The characters are so vivid. And it's like you feel like you know who these people are by the time you're done. And it's just this little short collection of stories. But for a long time this month, it was the only book that I had given 5 stars to. And I had read a bunch because I had, you know, more downtime at the beginning of the month and just so well deserved. I can't wait to see what this author does next. Before this, she was writing, like, she wrote a book about how to help your child get through a divorce. And she wrote it with her ex-husband. So I feel like she must just like personally be comfortable in these kind of gray areas.
Yeah.
If she can like write a, like do a whole project with someone she just divorced, that's pretty incredible.
Wow. So did you hear about this book?
I'm not sure. The cover is very distinct. It has a woman in a blouse with a bow. But I feel like I didn't really hear much about it until it was on the National Book Award list. Because you know how books get named to those lists kind of early. like when they first came out. And I do work with someone who also has had a book of short stories published by the same press. And so I might have heard about it from her. But because I know her, I also know they just, you know, they don't put as much into, like, you don't see billboards with these books on them, you know?
Right.
But it's such a good collection. I kind of think whoever's choosing these books at this press, like, they might need to like start their own press or something because it does. It's not the kind of short story collection you'd usually see. Like, I don't think you see short story collections very often from academic presses. I don't know. Maybe I'm putting too much on that, but it didn't quite seem like a match to me. But I'm so glad it got published because I'm so glad I read it. So
yeah. It sounds great. I'll have to put it on my TBR. I don't read a lot of collections of short stories, but I do enjoy them when I do, usually, because I end up reading based on other people's recommendations. So,
yeah, I struggle with short stories. So for me to actually like a collection of them, I think means good things. But I guess, like, personally, I just like to hear stories of people who have turned their back on expectations in various ways. Like, no, that's not right for me. This is right for me. Mm-hmm. I'll make it work kind of attitudes. That's my jam. So this book is full of that.
Oh, good. Yeah. That's definitely something that I think I'm looking for more in the books I read and the media I consume too, because I feel like that's been a lot of my life the past few years is trying to let go of others' expectations and my perceptions of what others' expectations are of me and, you know, how I live my life and figuring out how I want to go about it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think you'll like these a lot. I do think that in this collection, you know, there are some circumstances where people might just be assuming that others have expectations, but I would say that the other church ladies in this particular case are making judgments. They are noticing. And so that does play into the stories in some ways. But even just that expectation of judgment drives the narrative at times, which I thought was really interesting. It's good. But let's move to your second book.
So my second pick is The Chain by Adrienne McKenty. It is totally different from my first pick. It's a thriller, and it's sort of a high concept thriller about this chain. It's called The Chain. It's this elaborate kidnapping scheme entity that exists in this book. So what happens is, I'm trying to figure out how I can explain this well. What happens is, a person has to kidnap the loved one of a family near them in order for their own kidnapped loved one to be released by the previous people on the chain. Trigger warning for children in peril, trigger warning for kidnapping. It begins with a young girl, 13-year-old Kylie, being kidnapped by this couple when she's waiting at the bus stop to go to school. That's the very beginning. That's the first chapter. And then the next chapter, we meet the main character, whose name is Rachel. Her daughter is Kylie. She gets a call from an unknown number, and the person who calls her has like a distorted voice, is using like a voice changer, and just tells her, like, you're now part of the chain. You have to continue the chain. The most important thing is the chain, not the money. So part of being on the chain is when your loved one, usually your child, has been kidnapped, the first step is for you to gather a certain amount of money that the people who run the chain tell you they need from you. And then you provide it using the dark web in Bitcoin. And that's the first step. And so she gets this call saying, like, this is what's going on. And she, of course, oh, and by the way, Rachel, she is a survivor of breast cancer, and she's on her way to her oncologist's office for an appointment because she just had to get tested and her oncologist wants to see her in person. So that's a bit ominous. She gets this call. She pulls over to the side of the road and is, of course, in disbelief because she thinks like, oh, this is a prank, or like, what are you talking about? You know, this can't be right. Then she, right after, the unknown person calls her and tells her, like, you're now a part of the chain. You know, don't call the cops or your kid will be killed. Like, there's no going back. She gets a call from the woman who kidnapped her daughter. And this woman tells her the same thing. Like, I have your daughter. You have to continue the chain. You have to follow all the rules. You can't involve any law enforcement. If you do, then I'll be forced to kill your child. And she takes a picture of Kylie, Rachel's daughter, and sends it to her to, you know, prove that this is what's happening. So, of course, Rachel starts freaking out, as you can imagine. And she does contemplate going to the police. And she contemplates involving her ex-husband, Marty. He's an attorney. And they're on, like, pretty good terms because of Kylie. But she ultimately decides she can't involve him because he'll go straight to the cops. And she has decided at that point that she can't risk Kylie's well-being because Kylie's all she has left, she feels. She ends up waffling a little bit at first. Then she gets a call from the people who run the chain, and they are very clear that she just has to start acting, like doing what they tell her to do. It becomes clear that they are monitoring her through all of her devices and possibly following her. So they know, like, if she goes to the cops or to, you know, wherever she goes, they know. Like, she, when she goes to the bank to try to get the money to give to them, I think it's $25,000. Afterwards, they call her and they're like, we know you were at the bank. And anyway, so it's becomes more and more twisty and complicated. And she ends up telling her ex-brother-in-law, Paul, about who is a, he's a former, I think he was formerly in the army, if I remember correctly. He served in the military for a long time before being discharged. And he's a hunter and he's worked in private security and stuff. He, unbeknownst to her, but it becomes known to us, he is also a heroin addict. And she involves him. She tells him everything. And he's like, okay, I'll help you. Because she feels like she can't do all of this on her own. Because she has to pick a target, a family, and decide who from this family she's going to kidnap and hold until the next people on the chain do their part, do the same thing, provide the money to the people who run the chain and kidnap someone and so on. And so she feels like she can't do it alone, and she starts looking for targets near her. So we get her point of view. We also get Paul's point of view. We get Kylie's point of view. The main ones, I would say, are Rachel's and Kylie's. And so we see her, like, being held captive by this couple. And then we also, later on in the book, start to get the point of view of one of the people who runs the chain. And that's in part one. And so, as you can imagine, it gets real, real fast for Rachel. Because she goes through with finding a target and she kidnaps a child. And it doesn't go according to plan. So she has to improvise on the fly, which sounds so weird saying that aloud when it comes to kidnapping. But she has to improvise, and with the help of Paul, and they end up kidnapping a child. She has a very serious peanut allergy. And so I won't say any more than that. I don't want to spoil any more of the plot, but things happen and it is fast-paced and nail-biting. You're just like on the edge of your seat, like, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And then part two is also the same way. It begins, you know, sort of more slowly, but then it picks up once you realize that the events of the story aren't quite over yet. But I don't want to give anything else away.
Yeah,
I read this so fast. I think I heard about it from Book Riot's podcast, Red or Dead, which is all about mysteries and thrillers and suspense. That's where I first heard about it, and then found it on Libby, the audiobook, actually, which I recommend the audiobook. The narrator, I'm sorry, I can't remember her name right now. I wish I could remember her name because she's so good. She does such a good job narrating. She, for me, made the writing more palatable, I guess you could say, because so I read most of it. as an audiobook. And then for the last like 5% of the book, I switched to the ebook from Libby. And that's when I was able to see the way that the author has his paragraphs are super short. So it's like short, punchy paragraphs, just like over and over. Mm. And I get why he does that. But if I had had to read that entirely, I would have had to get used to that, like the way that it looked on the page and the way that it sounded in my head, you know, when I was reading it. Mm. But with the audiobook, the narrator made that work so well. I didn't even really like, I noticed it. I noticed this particular way that this author has of writing with. It's sort of like Hemingway-esque times 20, you know? The narrator, she just brought these characters to life and these scenes to life so well. I recommend the audiobook if you go with that. But again, trigger warning, content warning for children in peril, kidnapping, violence, child abuse, things like this. So be forewarned.
It looks like it's January Lavoie.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. I've heard her narrate other things, I think. So mm-hmm. Yeah, she's just really good.
Yeah. That can make or break a book, can't it?
Yes, absolutely.
I've never tried the Write or Dead podcast, so that's a good recommendation too. It's all it's crime good. And like mm-hmm. thriller type stuff.
Yes. So it's mystery, thriller, suspense, and true crime. Cool. So they cover the gamut, cozy mysteries to like thrillers and psychological suspense, domestic suspense or whatever that subgenre is called now, and true crime. So yeah, I've gotten a lot of good like recommendations from them.
So. And I'm assuming that Red is like R-E-A-D.
Yes, it's spelled R-E-A-D.
Yeah, okay. That's cute. Well, my next book actually fits into that kind of category, I think. I never really know what to call it either. It's kind of a thriller, kind of a suspenseful novel. It's called White Ivy by Susie Yang. And I think this is a debut novel. And it's actually, I was trying so hard to finish all of my 2020 advanced reader copies before the end of 2020, and I didn't. And I had several that were quite long books left over, and this is the last one. And so I finished it this week. I couldn't put it down. It's crazy. It's about this woman. It starts with her as a baby. So her name is Ivy, and she's born to Chinese parents who have immigrated to the United States. So technically she's born in the United States, but then they send her back to her grandmother while they try to kind of make a life for themselves. I've encountered this more than once lately in a book, so it must happen quite a bit. So her grandmother, who I adore, teaches her how to steal stuff. And so that plays into her entire life. And so when she's around, I would say 5 or 6, she comes back to the United States and her mother's had another child. So now she has a little brother and then she goes to school. Everything kind of comes to head at this party where she's at this boy's house. She's not supposed to be there. Her parents, her entire family actually comes and picks her up. It's just not a good moment. It embarrasses her entirely. Like she can never go back. She has to switch schools. Like it's crazy. And so you kind of move in these sections in the book through different sections of her life. So first it's her childhood, and then it's her, you know, middle school to high school transition. And then she goes off to this other school. She starts doing a little bit better. And then she kind of gets wrapped up with a boy in the neighborhood who knows her, and he sees through her because all this time she's been stealing stuff and she gets really good at it. She can steal clothes. She can steal, you know, just whatever she wants to steal. And so it's kind of funny because she goes through this experience with her friends, which I think a lot of kids that age go through. But I kind of felt, well, maybe they're actually sensing something about her that's not normal, because she does kind of come across as a little bit like a sociopath, I would say. She gets really obsessive about people and isn't ever really comfortable around them. And a lot of times that would be like, well, you know, child from somewhere else, that happens. But it seems a little bit darker than that. And so then you move forward, she goes to college, she has some relationships, she almost gets married, and then she ends up with this other person. And then it all comes back to this place she grew up and these people that she grew up with, and she ends up in a relationship that connects to that. It's the same thing. You can't really talk about everything. It's so hard. You don't want to give it away. It takes her into some darker places, and I guess The way it, I can't even talk about it, how it ends. What should I even say? There are some surprising twists and turns. I think that's what kept me reading it, actually, because I guess I could have understood if she just went out and had a fabulous life, or she went to jail, or, you know, something like that. But it's much more complicated than that, like where she goes back. It's just the part that she keeps going back to people instead of, like with my earlier book, where people are just like, I'm just done with you, you know. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. It's hard to know what else to say about it.
Yeah, without spoiling anything.
Yeah, but there's a lot of tensions there. And I think there's always the tension between old money and new money. So that's there, right? And then there's the tension between white people and people who aren't white, and how white people always have some kind of superiority complex, even if someone's richer than them, even if someone's more educated than them, you know, they still believe somehow that they're the best. And so, like, I just remember this one scene that they're with these people that are supposedly very wealthy, but yet they have this beach house that they don't fix. And so the roof leaks, and she's laying in this bed with the roof leaking going, why do they do this? I think she also doesn't understand them. So that's, it's mutual, but maybe one of the more memorable grandmother characters in a novel too, because she's really not a caretaker. She's tough. And partly the reason her grandmother's so good at stealing is because she had to survive. And so it kind of gets translated into this American context where maybe the stakes aren't really that high, but they feel high. Yeah, that's a great book. And I don't usually read this kind of thing. Not usually, but something about the cover of this one drew me in, and then I finally got to it.
What's the cover?
I think you could tell she's Chinese. Maybe a teenager, and she's sitting there, but you only see her from like the nose down.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. It's kind of simple, but it didn't look like anything else.
Mysterious.
Yeah, a little bit of mystery, a little bit of isolation.
I haven't heard of this book, so.
Yeah, that's the funny thing is that I think it came out in November. And then when I wrote my little mini review about it on Instagram, I had several people like, oh, I've never heard of this. And then in Goodreads, people are like, I've never heard of this. But then someone else, I won't out her, but she emailed me when she saw I was reading the book and said, can we get together and talk about this book? Because she liked it so much. I probably would be a little bit more articulate about it if I had had that conversation already, but I haven't.
Gotcha.
It's just so hard to know how to talk about books like this. You know, the enjoyment of it is experiencing it.
I just wrote it down, so I'm going to check it out, put it on my Twitter.
Let me know what you think of it when you read it. What is your last book?
So my last book is called One by One by Ruth Ware. It's also a thriller type, although I would classify it more as a mystery. It kind of reminded me of a locked room mystery, although it's not technically a locked room mystery. If you've ever read any of Ruth Ware's other books, she likes to do this sort of trope wherein she sticks a group of people in a somewhat isolated setting, or actually isolated setting, like a cabin in the woods or a cruise ship that is, you know, on the ocean or something like that. And then, you know, things start to happen, like a murder happens, people go missing, things like this. And this one is a lot like that. It takes place in the French Alps at a ski chalet where this group of people who work for this startup called Snoop are taking vacation of sorts. Well, you know, it's like a corporate retreat type of thing. So there are two people who work at the chalet during the busy season who do the cooking and the cleaning and the hosting, looking after the group of people who have booked it for however long. And so they're there waiting for this other group. And the group of the startup Snoop is the two co-founders, the accountant, the attorney, and like the marketing person, the PAs, and the whatever. I don't even know what one of the characters actually does for them. Her name is Tiger, but she's like their brand ambassador or something. I don't even know. And yeah. And it's that kind of like startup culture. It sort of skewers like toxic corporate culture, the kind that we've sort of heard about in the news these past few years from, you know, Silicon Valley and things like this. And so this group is going on this retreat and we get two viewpoints in first person. We get that of Liz, who is with the group from Snoop, but she no longer works for Snoop. She used to work for them, but she doesn't now. We're not sure why, what happened, or why she's on this retreat. All we know is she is on this retreat. And then we get Aaron, the point of view of Aaron, who is she works in the chalet with the chef, and it's her job to clean up after the group and show them, to give them the lay of the land, of the slopes, and kind of be like a hostess type. And she's been working here for a while. Again, we're not really sure why she's there. There are some hints that, like, you know, she's young and intelligent. We're not really sure all of her background at first, but there are kind of hints that there's a real reason why she's working in a chalet in the French Alps when, you know, she's British. And anyway, but it's very mysterious. And like I said, we get first person point of view from each of these characters. There's like a lot held back that each of them hold back. So if that kind of bothers you when a character is pretty noticeably holding information back and or is an unreliable character or unreliable narrator, then maybe don't read this book. But I thought that the way that the author handled these things was really adept. Like, she's really good at point of view characters who are like, they're not revealing their hand, you know, up front. That's not the way that they operate. Plot wise, this group arrives at the chalet and it becomes apparent very quickly to Aaron that there's some tension between the members of the group. There's even some animosity, maybe. There's definitely power plays happening. One of the co-founders books this. She's prepared this whole presentation for the first day, and the other co-founder and the rest of the group had no idea that this was coming. And Aaron gets to overhear these people talking and having conversations because they all treat her like the help. They treat her like she's just there to hold the tray of champagne and hors d'oeuvres. You know what I mean? Like, so they don't really care what she hears or overhears. They don't even really acknowledge her otherwise. And then Liz she's a bit of a cipher. When we meet her, she's obviously not liking the fact that she's on this retreat with them, but she doesn't really reveal why she doesn't like it, why she decided to be there. It becomes clear that she has a lot of anxiety about being around people and in groups of people. And she has a lot of worry and anxiety about what's going to happen on this trip. And then what does happen is they decide to go skiing, obviously. But the day that they decided to go skiing, it just so happens that there's a terrible snowstorm rolling in. So they decide to all go like anyway, before the storm really starts, you know, causing problems. One of them goes missing at the end. Like, they all return to the chalet just as the storm is rolling in and they're closing down the slopes. I can't remember all of there are a bunch of technical terms, skiing terms that I just don't know because I've never gone skiing in my life, but
like the black diamond and all
yeah,
that stuff.
Yeah. Like the blue slope and the green one and the pister or whatever, however you pronounce it. Like, I don't even know. But I had to look up some of these terms. So I guess I learned and then forgot. But they closed down all of the slopes because the storm is huge. And so they basically are closing down the resort. So this happens when they're all about to do their last run of the day. And they end up going back to the chalet and they're missing a person. Actually, they're missing two people. One of them is Liz. Liz shows up. And then they're waiting and waiting for the last person to show up. She is the co-founder and she never shows. So they're like, what's going on? Did she go down to the village that's like at a lower altitude from them? Is she stuck there now that everything's closed? It's a very isolated part of the mountains where they are, where their chalet is. So the only way to get out of there when it's snowing is to ski. Otherwise, there's a transportation that takes them from the village Saint Antoine up to the chalet. It's called a funicular, which I'd never actually heard that term until this year. I think there was another book where I came across this term. But anyway, it's basically like a closed, glassed-in tramway, I guess, that takes them up from the village lower down to the chalets that are higher up. But all of that gets shut down because of this storm that's supposed to drop a ton of snow. And so they don't know what happened to her. And they try to get help because the next morning they're snowed in. And so they're trying to call the police, call the authorities, and none of them are getting any reception. The internet's down. One of them gets through to the authorities and tells them, this person is missing from our party and we're snowed in. We need help. Then they lose power. And so it kind of gets worse from there. They lose power and they are stuck in this chalet altogether, everyone except the missing person. So Snoop is an app. You connect it to your Spotify account and you can use it to literally listen to what another person is listening to at the same time. So if a celebrity has Snoop, you can look them up. And if they're online listening to something, you can listen to what they're listening to at the same time.
Ooh, I don't know if I like that.
Yeah. When I read that, I was like, no, thank you. But that's what this whole app is all about. That's all you can do with it, really. And you can follow people so that whenever they go online and start listening to something, you can tune in. And unbeknownst to the world, they are developing another component for it. Their programmer guy who does all the code, Elliot, he has developed something he calls Geo Snoop, where you can go on Snoop and see what the people within your vicinity are playing. Like the people within a certain number of meters of you are playing at any given time. So he uses this to try to track the missing person from their party. He learns that her phone, because he uses it works technically, but he's able to use GPS to see that her phone is on a certain section of this mountain where this slope is that they think that they saw, that one of them saw her on earlier in the day. I think it's the black version. I don't know. Again, I don't know skiing, but it's the more advanced slope. Aaron, the person who's been working at the chalet and who's a very good skier, very experienced, knows that this slope on one side of it is a sheer drop off, essentially. And so based on what the GPS coordinates and how and when they compare it to the map of the mountain of the resort, she figures out that probably what happened is this missing person from their party actually fell off the slope and is, dead. She fell off the cliff side. There's no way that she can still be alive. Of course, everyone is really upset and it's a huge, a whole thing where they have to have this meeting about it. And it's very sad. And then they're in this meeting and then they're like, wait, there's one person missing. Where's Elliot? He's the one who developed GeoSnoop and was able to track the missing person. Turns out he was murdered in his room in the chalet. So that's when things get even worse. And I won't say any more after that because I don't want to spoil anything. But that's when the plot really takes off. Obviously, something sinister is happening. It's not just that they're snowed in, that if they leave, they could possibly be killed by an avalanche and they have a missing person, but there's someone murdering, someone murdered one of their party. The plot thickens and gets twisty and turny, and there's a giant twist toward the end. So usually I guess these twists when I'm reading a book, but this one actually surprised me a little bit because it took a lot of finessing of the writing itself in order for the author to pull it off. And I don't want to go into detail about it because I don't want to give away this thing. It's a huge spoiler. But suffice it to say, I was impressed. I really liked this. I read this in one day. It kind of reminded me a little bit of Agatha Christie. like I said, a little bit of a locked room mystery, but it's not technically a locked room mystery.
I feel like I should buy it and save it for a ice storm. Like, it seems like it would be really good reading for that kind of day, you know, where you're stuck. I mean, I guess we're all kind of stuck.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it didn't make me feel claustrophobic or anything, but it sort of was, for me, kind of perfect reading for wintertime in a pandemic where I'm stuck at home. Where I live in Arizona, we don't get super cold weather. Like, that's just not a thing where I live in Arizona.
Yeah.
And so reading about all this snow and all this cold actually was kind of cozy for me. But at the same time, I could be like, I'm not stuck in a snowstorm. Like, I'm not.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not snowed in. I don't have to worry about avalanches. Yeah. Like, I could be like, I can live this vicariously, sort of, but without the dangers.
You know, Spotify, I know that Snoop thing doesn't really exist, but I mean, if you're friends with someone in Spotify, it updates live with what it people does. Are listening yes. to, which is cool and weird. Mm-hmm. And like, you can put yourself on private.
Yes.
Like, uh-huh. I don't want people to know I'm listening to Madonna right now. So. But I was just reading an article earlier today, because the news is coming back around again about how they're trying to connect Spotify to your emotional state, because like, there's this new patent that they want to use speech recognition to help determine emotional state, gender, age, and accent so that they can kind of up their recommendation game. And I'm like, no, you cannot have access to those things. That's crazy.
I had not heard about that, but that reminds me of Snoop, because Snoop is like, oh yeah, we changed our permissions access. Like, the, you know, the people who work there talking about it in the book, like, oh yeah, we changed our permissions access last year, but we're not sure that our users really noticed, because there hasn't been like a bunch of like people being up in arms about it. Because
never read it. You just click.
Right.
Yes,
so you just click. Yep. Let's go. Because the TOS is like all of this tiny print that's in legalese or whatever.
Yeah.
And they changed their permissions so that they can actually gather data from a person's phone about where they are in the world, you know? Yeah. And so if people really knew about that, they might not all be okay with it. So that does remind me of that. No, I don't want you to access that data about me. You don't need to know that.
Right. I mean, I can see how it would help what they're trying to do, but it also can be used badly. So, well, Bianca, it has been so good to talk books with you today. Is there anything that you're reading next, or that you've already started, that you're excited about?
Yeah, so I'm currently reading It Takes Two to Tumble by Kat Sebastian. I'm loving it. After the last book I read, which I read yesterday in one sitting, and I regret reading it because it made me want to bleach my brain. I needed a palate cleanser. I needed a brain cleanser. I needed something that would end happily. And Kat Sebastian's romance is just perfect for that. They're romantic and they're moony and they're sort of affirming. I really like her writing too. It's very accessible, but also it's still, for historical romance, like, it works, makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really enjoying that.
I'm still working my way through the Tournament of Books list. So I just have a few left for the shortlist. I might actually finish the list this year. Nice. I had actually bailed on Shuggie Bain earlier this year, okay, because I started it in audio. And it's like one of those books where I can tell what it's trying to do. Like, it's Glasgow. It's during the Thatcher era where, you know, all the mines shut down and everyone loses their job and, you know, everyone's mm-hmm. starving basically. And it's about a little boy who's poor and has an alcoholic mother. And so I decided at that point, like, this is just not something I really want in my ears, you know? So I originally started in audio because I thought, oh, cool accent, but I abandoned it. Now I'm back reading it again, but I'm reading the ebook. So I've been reading that from time to time. Like, I know it won the Booker Prize, but there's just, mm-hmm. there's some kind of disconnect with me and I can't even tell you what it is. The writing is good. The story is good. The characters are memorable. It's just, it's somehow not the story I want to be reading right now.
Yeah, I get that.
But I'm reading it. Well, this was really fun. So thank you for coming back on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Reading Envy podcast. You can follow me on Twitter @ReadingEnvy. or find a complete listing of our podcast episodes, as well as all of the books discussed on today's episode at readingenvy.com.
By the way, there is a cat sitting on my desk and he's under the microphone. So just in case you hear any strange noise, it's probably him purring.